is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Tsai Ing-wen, the president of Taiwan, traveling to New York, Central America, Los Angeles, said to be the predicate for threats by the People's Republic of China. At the same time, the president of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky, standing up very clearly saying, I will regain all the territory of my country, the Russian forces will leave, and then Russia will pay reparations, very clearly. And NATO supports President Zelensky. And the United States and assembly of allies support Taiwan. And yet, Daniel Henniger, deputy editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, writing his Wonderland column, reminds me of how we all watched the United Nations and the United States and other nations of Europe all pledge support for the democracy demonstrations in Hong Kong in 2019. And then, Dan, a good evening to you. This was the part of your column that convinced me. What happened to Hong Kong? And is Taipei, is Kiev thinking it could happen to us? Good evening to you.
Hi there, John. I think they apparently they do wonder. But President Tsai was here. I mean, the outpouring of bipartisan support for Taiwan was really quite extraordinary. I mean, and indeed, the unity around the idea that China has become a threat to the United States is itself an amazing bipartisan achievement. I can't think much of any other issue in which there is such a sense of bipartisan support for any idea. The question I think that President Tsai must and the Taiwanese must wonder is it all talk or is it real? Because they did indeed watch the people of Hong Kong demonstrate for the better part of a year. It was one of the most extraordinary acts, little city of Hong Kong. It was most extraordinary acts of bravery on behalf of self-determination and freedom that we have seen in a very, very long time. But the interesting point that I tried to make, and at least the point that I thought was interesting that was worth making in this column, is that a lot of the support for Taiwan was expressed as basically being in the United States' national interests. Few people mention the word democracy, and that's because the phrase democracy building, at least in a lot of conservative Republican circles, has become something to stay away from, which was ironic insofar as in her speech, her remarks at the Reagan Library, President Tsai of Taiwan explicitly referred to the democracy that we have just built. I mean, they have only had really open elections there since the late 1990s. It is a young, nascent democracy, and she explicitly said that's what we're trying to defend. And the question is whether that is at the center of political interest here in the United States now, or whether it's simply a cold-blooded calculation that somehow a country like Taiwan, I think Taiwan is in U.S. interest. The larger question being, will the United States, in at crunch time, when it matters, do what is necessary to defend a country, say a democracy like Taiwan?
You asked the question much more bluntly, Dan, in your column. Will the Americans and Western Europeans find a way to sell us out? Once I read that, I couldn't answer immediately yes. There are too many voices here who are protesting that the war in Ukraine is going on long enough and that sacrificing prosperity for a little island off the coast of China is too much to ask. Those voices are louder and louder. So let's go to parts of the European Union and the NATO that are clearly for sticking it out in Ukraine. Are they enough? You list them. Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Romania, Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia. Is that enough? Or do we need France to be clear? Do we need Germany to be clear?
Well, I think we do need France and Germany to be clear. They have been ambiguous, to say the least, as Emmanuel Macron was when he was recently in Beijing, was visiting with President Xi Jinping. He wondered whether defending Taiwan was in fact a European interest. And, you know, what's intriguing is that when President Tsai of Taiwan was in the United States, the Chinese became extraordinarily aggressive towards Iran, virtually assembling a ship blockade of the island. And I think there is a kind of malice aforethought to what the Chinese have been doing towards Taiwan, because it creates the idea that that is where the primary threat is, and that defending Ukraine becomes less in our national interest. I mean, Ukrainians kind of get left on the roadside. And I think President Xi in China understands that by redirecting attention to himself over there, it helps his ally, Vladimir Putin, try to clean up Ukraine. There is, in my mind, just it is an unavoidable reality that both Ukraine and Europe and Taiwan in Asia are both in the West interest to defend. And it certainly is an irony that the most ardent defenders of Ukraine are all of those countries that you just mentioned, more or less on the country's periphery, which spent 40 years under communist rule. Those are new, young democracies. And I think they understand best what's at stake there.
One more detail of your column. Yalta. You mentioned that Mr. Putin talks of Yalta often. Why? What is Yalta to him?
Yalta to him, I mean, he is literally referring to the Yalta Agreement of 1945, at which Winston Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt sat down with Joseph Stalin, and in return for what they expected to be Stalin's help in the war in the Pacific during World War II, conceded that his sphere of influence extended over Eastern Europe. Stalin said that he would allow free elections in the former Nazi-occupied territories. He, of course, lied. He just dropped an iron curtain over Eastern Europe and enveloped them under communist rule. Vladimir Putin's intention, I don't think he could quite get away with imposing the Russian system on all those countries again, but he believes that all of those countries should be inside the Russian sphere of influence. They should be tending or bowing east rather than to the West. And in his mind, that's what would be a peaceful agreement. That's kind of explicitly, he's given this talk several times about setting up a kind of post-Yalta agreement in which Russia's legitimate interests are recognized. Those legitimate interests being control of Ukraine, Belarus, and effectively the Baltics. It's an explicit challenge to the post-World War II order, the post-Cold War order.
The doubt comes home. We have less than a minute. The doubt is in Washington. The doubt is in both parties. Yes, Dan? That's how you read it? The doubt.
I read the doubt. I read the ambiguity of commitment. These are real threats, John, and it's going to require a recommitment of defense spending, just as Ronald Reagan did to end the Cold War in the early 1980s. I don't think the Democratic Party has it in them, no matter what they say. Their commitments to domestic spending and spending on climate is just too intense. And so the burden falls on the Republican Party to make good on the reality of what they've been saying about defending our interest. They don't want to talk about democracy, but they have got to follow through on getting the United States in a position to be able to defend our so-called national interests.
We look forward to the summer debates by the Republicans and the use of the word democracy on stage. Daniel Henniger, I'm John Batchelor.